Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I am Brian Hefty along with my brother Darren. Today on the show, it's Farmer Friday. We'd love to hear from you. Our phone lines will be open all throughout the day. The number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. Or send us an email, radio@agphd.com. All right, we are going to get to the Ag PhD mailbag since it's a Farmer Friday right away. So let's hit it.
It's the mailbag!
Okay, first one comes in. This isn't a question as much as it's a comment. And I don't even have the farmer's name or the person's name here who says, Ag retailers rip people off for sure. They are high as a kite. And this had to do with a recent show we were talking about do your own spraying and just the opportunity to save some money on your farm if you do your own spraying. And, you know, one of the things that our dad always talked to us about was just being in control. Who's in control of your farm? And if you're counting on somebody else to do the work and you aren't monitoring that work, how do you know that work is getting done the way you want that work done? Anyway, in terms of ag retailers, I'm not going to sit here and say that that every ag retailer is perfect or anything else, but ag retailers do provide a lot of services. So anyway, I would just say each farmer is going to have to be their own judge on that thing, but thanks for the comment. All right, next one is from Stan, who says, how much dock do we leave in the field when the moisture in soybeans drops from, say, 14% to 9%? You know, Stan, we talk about this almost every single fall, because with soybeans, it's so easy to have those beans too dry. We as farmers hate dock, right? You bring your grain to the elevator, and the last thing you want to see happen when you get that check back is a deduction there or a dock. And it might just be, and this is the way it is on a lot of farms, I find, that the wife is the bookkeeper, and she gives the husband a hard time. And so we get emails like this from the husbands quite often saying, hey, my wife's giving me a hard time because I took a dock when I hauled these beans in at 14%. Can you please explain to me again what I need to say to her so she understands where we're coming from on this whole dock thing? Okay, so basically the way it works with soybeans is we figure shrink at roughly 1.5% per 1 point of moisture. Most grain elevators want the beans right at 13%, or let me rephrase that. They will start docking you when the moisture is above 13%. Usually every half a point and you'll get so much dock. But anyway, here's my point. If you're shooting for 13% and now you haul beans in, to Stan's comment here, 9%, that's 4% difference. Well, 4% times the 1.5% shrink, that's 6%. 6%. You start thinking about that, that is an enormous figure. If I had 60 bushel beans, 6% is 3.6 bushels. Okay, well, if I haul my beans in at 14%, yep, I might have to take a little bit of a dock. But you know what I don't have? I don't have that hidden yield loss out in the field when I combine those beans too dry. So we talk all the time here about grain moisture. And it's just so important. We would just encourage you maybe take a look at getting automatic bin fan controls or something like that, because we definitely do not want to haul beans in at 9, and hauling them in at 14, not so bad. I don't mind that a little bit. I'd way rather have my beans at 14 than at 9. You're going to be money ahead. Okay, and this next one, also, I don't have a name, so I don't know why I've got a bunch of them with no names today. But anyway, this one was commenting on, we talked about on the TV show something about tractors, and he says, I can even borrow money against a tractor. Seed, not so much. Well, I don't know where you're farming, but we can borrow money against seed on our farm, and I would find most every farmer would be able to as well. All right, this next one is from Adam, and he says, in 2020, I was 100% corn. I decided to try ammonium sulfate for the first time this year as a fertilizer, adding 100 pounds to my 80 by 60 blend. AMS was my only source of sulfur, and I use ASA with the anhydrous for zinc. Anyway, he says, for 2021's corn acres on what I didn't VRT, I put out an 80 by 80 plus 20 units of elemental sulfur and will come back before spring planting with 100 pounds of ammonium sulfate on all the acres. Was I better off to wait until spring to put out the ammonium sulfate, or could I have done it 3 weeks ago when the rest of the dry fertilizer went on? And he is, let's see, right near Sioux City, Iowa, this says, so about 100 miles south of us. I would just say, I mean, there's no reason why you can't put ammonium sulfate out in the fall. We were talking about this a little bit on the show yesterday. I have no issue putting fall nitrogen out on heavy ground where you're not getting rain and the ground's going to freeze. So if our ground's froze here now, for example, and I'm guessing yours is too. So at that point, it's just like applying it in the spring. So you might as well put it on late fall as opposed to early spring. The only big exception is flooding. So south of Sioux City, it depends. If you're in the river bottom and you've got the Missouri River flowing through and it might wipe you out, okay, well, that's a good reason not to put fertilizer on. So unless you've got that, I would say you're just fine. Also, he says, if I plant soybeans in 2021, what are your opinions on ammonium sulfate for soybeans? Well, look, we will usually put a little bit of nitrogen out. Generally speaking, it's like MAP or DAP, and so you get a little bit of nitrogen there. You don't typically need a lot of nitrogen for soybeans unless you're going for really high yield, like over 80, maybe over 70 or 80. Or if you have very low organic matter soils, that you're not going to get a bunch of free nitrogen release out of that organic matter. So we've studied nitrogen for years and years and years on soybeans. Most of the time, it doesn't pay unless you've got one of those two scenarios, really high yield or basically, in effect, really light, low organic matter soil. So those are the two situations I would say the ammonium sulfate's probably going to pay. But you know what? It doesn't cost very much. If you want to try just a few pounds, it's no big deal. We do like having at least a little bit of nitrogen out there early on. But I would say, too, with ammonium sulfate, we look at that as kind of a controlled release nitrogen. It's going to take 30 to 60 days for that nitrogen to break down and come available for your crop, most likely in your situation where you are at and located and for the weather you have. So I just kind of keep that in mind. All right. Well, it is a Farmer Friday. We'd love to hear from you. We'll be right back after this.
The Pentair Hypro Express Flush Valve reduces plugged nozzles and improves cleanout of your spray boom. Simply flush boom sections with a quarter-turn ball valve and leave your tools in the cab. Plus, installation is easy. Simply remove the existing end cap plug and replace with the Hypro Express Flush Valve. Learn more at pentair.com/hypro.
Your soybeans are in the bin, but the game isn't over yet. Score more points this year by taking your beans to the end zone. At $10 beans, every point of moisture below your target takes away 15 cents per bushel. Reclaim that lost yield with the End Zone Bin System from Farm Shop MFG.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
A history of success means proven performance, but let's call performance what it is. Profitability. And boosting yours, no matter what the season brings, is the goal of DeKalb brand corn. Backed by exclusive genetics, whole farm solutions, and unmatched dealer support, let nothing shake your perseverance. Ask your dealer how DeKalb brand corn can help you realize a future of performance. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
You're looking for soybeans that give you the yield you want. But when it comes to fighting your toughest weeds, you also need flexibility. Introducing Extend Flex Soybeans. Elite genetics with triple tolerance to dicamba, glyphosate, and glufosinate. The yield you want, the choice you need. Learn more at extendflexsoy.com. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio on a Farmer Friday. Our phone lines will be open throughout the show today at 844-44-AG-PHD. Also, you can email us, radio@agphd.com. Got a number of items in the Ag PhD mailbag already. That's always fun, and look forward to seeing what those calls are going to be. I was on a radio interview this morning on another program, and they just asked me, what is Farmer Friday like? Do you kind of know all these guys that you're going to be talking to? I'm like, you know what? There's a few people that have questions that come up during the week, and we know that they're coming on, but there's certainly people that are going to call in and we have no idea what the question is going to be. And that's really exciting and fun. And then also we got some common issues that have been happening, and occasionally we'll have one of our friends in the industry call in so we can chat with them a little bit. We got Tony Wendler on right now with Farm Shop MFG to talk through a few things. Tony, how are you doing today?
I am doing excellent. What a beautiful day here in Northern Iowa.
It's amazing to get this kind of weather in December, and it's fun to get looking at things. But you know what? I want good weather in the spring, because if we have trouble with the planter, we have to fight it all year. And I was just talking with a group of farmers this morning about some of the challenges they had with the planter this year, and there's just a lot of moving parts there and a lot of things to take a look at. And I know you work with the Germinator closing wheels. Can you talk a little bit about what the experience has been? We've had a couple of wet years in your geography this year, a little more dry, but I think it was still fairly wet this spring. What did you see and what was working good?
Well, I'm going to start off with the first client I've got down in Texas who wrapped up, when did he wrap up his harvest? September, early August. He was telling me that first year with it, planted 6,000 acres of corn with germinators, said he had the most even emergence he's ever seen and had a significant boost in yield, and he's going to credit a lot of that to having even emergence across his whole farm. One of the components he talks about, down there his farm is spread so widely apart that when they get to a field, it doesn't matter what the conditions are, the field's getting planted. So if there's a low spot that's mud, they're going through it. If there's dry over the top of the hill.
Sounds like my brother, Tony.
Is that right? Yeah.
There's no stopping. We got to get this done.
When we get out there in the field, I think all of us are guilty of that. We get out there in the field, you just kind of want to keep going. But his comments through whatever conditions he was planting through, it worked. Whether it was dry, whether the tillage was not the quality he was looking for, when in ideal tillage or in the mud. And one of the things that about our wheel that is different than anything else out there, we've got what we call our inner shoulder. It's an extra ring of steel that sits on the inside that after the spikes break off that sidewall, that inner shoulder acts like the old press wheel, firms the soil back onto the seed, and just encases each of the kernels in soil. The seed-to-soil contact is fantastic. And whether it's corn or beans, sunflowers, it just delivers the seed-to-soil contact. And that is what your emergence comes from.
You know, that's a big deal, Tony. And we talk about it all the time. If we had irrigated sand, there are a lot of challenges that come with that, but one thing that's good about it is you can irrigate after planting, get nice even consistency about moisture throughout that soil. But where we're at in dryland farming, that seed to soil contact, there's absolutely nothing you can do if you don't get that piece right.
Yep, that's exactly right. And that's to get that even emergence, getting everything started. And then if you get that nice firming of the soil, the moisture wicks back up to the seed, which is another thing that's a real positive. If you've got a little bit of fluffiness in air, that moisture just does not wick up like you'd see in other circumstances.
No, and we see uneven emergence, and we see plants popping up late. I know this year, where especially areas where growers had a lot of residue, a lot of issues with residue this year, and then just a lot of issues with uneven moisture levels in soil, where if you didn't do that, you didn't get that seed to germinate at the same time as the ones around it.
That's has a huge impact, and it's going to cost you all season.
Yeah, so, it sure does. So I guess you can find out more information. Have you got more information on your website, Tony, on what you're doing?
Yes, we do. There's information on the closing wheels. We're adding more information as we go on, and if anybody wants to call and talk to me further, please do.
Sounds good. Tony Wendler with Farm Shop MFG. Thanks, Tony. Really appreciate it. Let's jump over to Minnesota. We've got Jerry with us right now. He farms over there. Jerry, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Good. Good. So you still out in the field doing any work, or you got everything wrapped up for the fall?
No. I'm finishing up some fall anhydrous application here today and tomorrow. So
there you go. Well, you know what? They say you want to put that on as that soil temperature is dropping just before freeze up. I think you're going to hit that about right.
Yeah, well, I thought we hit that about four times this fall already, but patience is kind of paying off here.
So. Yeah, it's crazy. Okay, so you tried something new this year. You were one of the first guys trying Extend Flex beans. What did you think of that?
When I sat down with my Bayer rep and my seed dealer at CHS here, we talked it through, and when we talked about the Asgrow Extend Flex beans, it was something that kind of intrigued me, giving me that extra mode of action with the tighter regulations on Extend-A-Max and just dicamba in general.
You know, you're in a state too, Minnesota, that had put some additional regulations on dicamba, and I know there'd been some frustration there with some of the growers that, man, it just wasn't working out the way the weather was and the timing windows. Having that liberty gives you an extra option too.
Yes, it does, and it eliminates that need for a burner as well. And I'm kind of, you know, more like most farmers, I like to see my field cosmetically look good. And you know, that week after using a Flex Star or a Cobra type product, just doesn't always sit well with a guy. So.
No, it sure doesn't. Well, okay, so what weeds are the challenge for you, Jerry, where you're farming?
For the main part, I've got a water hemp resistance problem, and then I just have some giant ragweed that can be a nuisance, but I can control that for the most part.
You know, you mentioned the ragweed too, and I know the pigweed gets so much attention, but there are certainly some areas out there where ragweed is a big challenge. What did you see when you were spraying dicamba? What have you seen with the Liberty component? Is this the first time you've used Liberty, or?
No, I've used Liberty quite a bit in the past. I really like the way Liberty works. It really seems to work well in the post-emerge soybeans. You know, as Liberty can be very weather dependent, you want 70 degrees,
sure,
nice, clear, sunny skies. In the past, and this never really worked for the corn because we were going after post-emerge corn and it was cooler, you know, earlier in the year. By the time we get to them soybeans, Liberty is a really viable product that really, really can help clean up your fields if you just are a little patient in the mornings and, you know, watch what time you quit in the afternoon.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a different product to use, and certainly you're spraying dicamba potentially here, Roundup potentially on Extend beans, and Liberty. You've got some different spray nozzles that a guy will use and different amounts of water and pressure and those types of things. But I do really, really like having the options. So how did you turn out this year? I know the weather was a little goofy in a lot of areas. Did you end up with some decent yields?
Yeah, I was extremely happy with the yields. I chose the Asgrow Extend Flex soybeans just for the simple fact that they have the genetic history behind them, the yield potential. It's not something that's new to them. They're on top of, you know, the top soybean yields. And what I wanted to do is just try them on my farm and see where they shook out compared to everything else. Just as far as technology and spraying, I was really not concerned with the yield one bit. I felt really confident going into it with the Asgrow platform there.
You bet. We're talking with Jerry over in the state of Minnesota. He's one of the first guys that got to plant Extend Flex soybeans. And Jerry, thank you so much. Thanks for sharing about your farm, and good luck here as you head into the new year.
All right. Thank you.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio, it's Farmer Friday. We're taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Stay tuned.
Revitec fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitec Fungicide, brand new chemistry, 3 no-excuse modes of action, 0 modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitec Fungicide from BASF, that's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
A lot goes into keeping a precision operation moving. The inputs you choose have to deliver results. New Dallaro Complete Fungicide from Bayer offers unmatched consistency and the most complete disease control available. Your corn and soybeans are protected and yields higher, even in unpredictable conditions. With Dallaro Complete, you get results you can count on to help keep your precision operation running smoothly. Always read and follow label instructions. To learn more, visit DallaroComplete.us today.
Give your corn a strong defense against stress throughout the season with MycoApply Endoprime SC. MycoApply Endoprime SC uses 4 specially selected species of mycorrhizal fungi to protect your crop against stress. That means more access to water and key micronutrients while building a healthy soil structure for stronger crops for years to come. Stronger corn starts beneath the surface. Learn more about MycoApply Endoprime SC at endoprimecorn.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
It's about time. Applied at Planting, new Xyway 3D fungicide from FMC delivers foliar disease protection from planting to harvest. Active ingredient flutriafol moves from the soil through the corn as it grows for inside-out protection from roots to tassel. For season-long protection, choose first-of-its-kind Infurrow Xyway 3D fungicide. To learn more, call 815-362-7747 today. Always read and follow all label directions.
We now bring you an important news bulletin.
This just in from Live Action News.
Innovation has come to the world of burndown.
New Elevore herbicide controls your toughest weeds, even glyphosate and ALS-resistant weeds like mare's tail and henbit. Talk with your retailer about Elevore herbicide today and ask how you can start elevating your burndown.
Each year brings new and unique challenges to farming, and your operation needs to constantly adapt to meet them. That's why at AgBiome, we're working every day to bring you new and better solutions. Microbial-based solutions that protect your crop and help it reach its full potential. To learn more about how we're doing it, visit agbiome.com. That's AGBIOME.com. AgBiome, feeding the world responsibly. Partnering with microbes for human benefit.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. It's Farmer Friday today. It's our favorite day of the week, not just because it's Friday, because we get to talk to lots of farmers. On our show on Fridays, we take your calls and agronomic questions all throughout, so you can email us, radio@agphd.com, or you can just give us a call today, 844-44-AG-PHD. We're happy to have Fred on with us right now over in Ohio. I think we had a question or two from you recently. Fred, how are you doing?
Doing pretty good, yeah. I'm always good to have a couple questions because you can always learn something.
Well, that means you're doing something. If you aren't running into any questions, I know my dad, when Brandon and I were getting started, he's like, if you guys aren't asking me any questions, I know you're not working because stuff's going right to happen. It's going to come up.
Yes, definitely. It's a never-ending process and no 2 years the same, so just manage it the best way you can. So.
If I remember right, you're putting on some lime. So talk to us about that a little bit. You must have found some low pH in your soil testing program.
Yeah, so I'm a first-generation guy, and I've been picking up some ground from some older farmers in the area who have been gracious enough to kind of help me out a little bit. And as they kind of retire, you know, I've been picking up some of their ground, and that's been great. But the only issue is sometimes those aren't the most fertile pieces of property that they've been either renting or dealt with. They're usually further away. But yeah, I've been doing some lime, just getting a bunch of soil tests, and yeah, lime and potassium seem to be the two big ones. And then I do have another question
sure.
On some micro ground that we've had for a while.
Okay.
We've got some iron levels that are pretty high. They're in the 40 to 45 range. And we have some manganese that are pretty high, too. They're in the 70s, 72. Now, I know that probably brings up a red flag. You know, the iron levels are lower than the manganese.
Yep.
And I didn't know, is that something that we should maybe consider supplementing in either a furrow or a foliar application just because of tie-up?
Well, you certainly could. And the iron is one that's pretty easy to get in through a foliar application too. But I know this, how low is the pH on this ground?
On this particular ground, it's 6.8.
Oh, shoot. Here's what I was getting at. On our farm, go ahead.
I have some other ground with the same situation that's in the 5.8 to 5.9 range.
Okay. On our ground, maybe your soil is a little bit different in Ohio than ours is, but where we've got lower soil pH, we have a lot more manganese availability. And so as we raise that pH up with the lime, a lot of times we'll see that manganese number go down. And it's something that Neil Kinsey had talked to us about as well, that, hey, when you guys get liming, you just have to watch some of these micros like manganese that might get tied up or become a little less available as your pH rises. But if you've already got the pH to 6.8 in that area, and we've got that iron lower than the manganese, yeah, we'd want to try and flip that around and start getting iron out there some way, somehow. Now, for our farm, we started getting a bunch of iron kind of for free. We were using some water treatment plant lime that was really high in iron, and it just got us to really be aware that everything we put on that field, we want to test. So if you had any manure sources or anything else that you're putting out there, you might get a complete test on those and just see maybe that iron is way higher than manganese in those things, and that could be part of your solution too.
Okay. Yeah, that's it's just kind of hard to bring yourself to supplement it whenever it shows high or very high on a soil test.
But yes.
At the same time, if it's not available, then it doesn't really matter how much is there. So
yeah, and it's a challenge because a lot of the ratings are compared against other samples that are coming in. Well, that's higher than some of the other samples we've got. Or hey, whenever it's at 40, we're going to call it high. We'd really like to be at 40. That's kind of a nice number, I think. It's just that manganese is super, super high and great. I think it's going to end up being a real asset for you going forward if you can just get some of the other nutrients up to that same kind of platform. You mentioned being a first generation farmer and picking up some ground from guys that are retiring, and Brian and I are fourth generation on this farm, but we were picking up ground from our dad. And when dad was in his final couple of years of farming, he's like, man, my P and K levels are pretty good. I'm pretty sure I can raise a good crop without adding any more. And so he mined out some of that P and K. So we kind of felt like the same situation you're in, that we were liming, we were adding a lot of P and K, and we thought, man, we could have picked up ground from anybody, not just dad, and we probably would have been just as good a shape.
Yeah, I mean, part of you is like, it's so easy to get upset, but at the same time, it's like, well, you know, I am running at a little bit lower rate than probably Joe Schmo down the road would have done, and it's, you know, pretty blessed to have that and everything else. But no, we've been, it's not easy. We've had to learn a lot of things in a short amount of time, and I always joke around. I said, yeah, by the time I'm dead and gone, we might have maybe a quarter of the stuff that we actually need to make things go smoothly, but
well, that's what I have too. By the time we're gone, I just figure, well, I might have figured out 1% of what's going on in this system. There's so much to learn. It does seem overwhelming, but I'm glad that you reached out to us a couple of times here, and if we can ever help you again, we're more than happy to.
Yeah, but you guys have been great. I didn't have any agronomy. I don't know if you saw what I
sure did.
I actually didn't know much of anything at all about agronomy until about 5 years ago when I left being a grain superintendent and then worked for a little co-op and was actually in charge of agronomy sales. So I watched a lot of Ag PhD videos just to kind of get refreshed, and I had a really good agronomist that I was working with at the time. It's like the easiest thing to refer back to anytime I get stuck on something is just type it in on YouTube or whatever for Ag PhD. And you guys have been a huge resource for our agronomy community.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Fred. Hey, really appreciate it. Appreciate the call today. Glad we got to talk a little bit, and don't be afraid to call in again.
I appreciate it. Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
You bet. You as well. Let's head over to Iowa. We got Gary on with us right now. Gary, I can't believe the weather you're getting in Iowa. This is amazing for December.
Granted, I'll tell you what, the whole fall's been pretty nice compared to the last two, maybe even three falls. You know, I guess we were deserving of a decent harvest season.
Yeah, well, honestly, if it's going to average out, it had to be really good because it's been really bad.
I mean, it was a pretty good growing season. We happen to be in northeast Iowa, so the derecho did not catch us.
Oh, thank goodness.
So I really feel sorry for some of them people that were in that path. I mean, it's pretty ugly. And I think the people I've talked to that were affected were fortunate enough that the crop insurance people worked with them pretty well, I believe. So, but, yeah, nobody likes to see them pictures or have to harvest that crap.
No.
No, that was terrible. We're steep enough. If we ever get hit with something like that, there's no way to harvest with our hills and, you know, keeping the combine head down where it needs to go. But, some of the things we've learned this year, we were really dry in August. I think we had a fantastic bean crop coming, and then August happened, and we just lost yield in that heat. When we had that last week of nearly 100-degree temperatures with no rain for a month, I think the pod count was there. There was a tremendous amount of pods. I mean, we still had respectable beans, but not what we could have had. But the other thing around here is the people that had corn on corn, I mean, long-term corn on corn, guys, 5-year, 10-year, 20-year corn, had terrible yields, really disappointing yields. But anybody that was on rotating come out pretty good this fall. So overall, with the increase in crop prices, the picture looks pretty decent.
Yeah, finally, for the first time in quite a few years, I've had a lot of discussions recently about that things are better. And also, we've got low interest rates, and I know a lot of folks are refinancing and locking things in long-term at these rates as well.
That's also true. I don't know how long they'll last, but we might as well take advantage of them while they're here. So,
yeah, that was some coaching.
There's one thing we're finding in this area. I don't know if it's widespread, but even with triple stack corn and long term corn on corn, really struggling even with a low rate of insecticide on rootworms. Are you running across that anywhere else?
Yeah, we sure are. That the rootworm pressure is up, and the resistance to some of these BT traits, especially the single ones, but even some of the stacked ones now, is real. So we are recommending that growers put on insecticide in the corn and corn situation. Definitely the high rates. Gary, we're up against a break here. If you want to hang on, you can. Stay tuned. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
Fill once, plant all day. The Thrive 3D application system from FMC is a revolutionary in-furrow crop protection platform that plants up to 480 acres between refills. The Thrive 3D application system mounts to most major planter brands and can be yours at no cost with the FMC Freedom Pass program. To learn more, call 815-362-7747 today. Always read and follow all label directions.
When it comes to commanding herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. Nufarm brings you Panther SC, an animal when it comes to speed of control and long residual on a broad spectrum of tough broadleaf weeds like mare's tail, Palmer amaranth, and water hemp. And did we mention convenience? Panther SC works in pre-plant, pre-emerge, and post-harvest systems and keeps your rotation options open. Nufarm and Panther SC, here to help.
Got resistant weeds? Add Tough 5EC as your post-emergence tank mix partner to deliver the knockout punch to Palmer amaranth and water hemp. Tough 5EC is a selective contact herbicide for post-emergence control of key broadleaf weeds, especially resistant strains. Tough 5EC is manufactured by Beltrum Crop Protection, an agrochemical company focused on providing innovative products with strong technical support. Ask your local retailer about Tough 5EC or visit BeltrumUSA.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
Did you know soybean diseases like white mold and sudden death syndrome can survive in your soil even after rotating crops? Prevention of these diseases is a constant battle, and yield loss from an infection can be devastating. The right management plan makes all the difference. Keep your beans safe next spring with Heads Up Seed Treatment. Heads Up guards your seed treatment from both white mold and SDS. Stay protected and profitable by asking to have your seed pre-treated with Heads Up. Learn more at HeadsUpST.com.
You would never plant seed or apply herbicide with a 20% success rate. So why are you still applying phosphorus fertilizer with a maximum availability of only 20%? Double your phosphate availability and increase yields with NutriCharge from AgroTech USA. NutriCharge's patent-pending technology protects phosphorus from negative chemical reactions that tie up your fertilizer investment. NutriCharge performs across all soil types and pHs. Contact AgroTech USA or your local Van Deese supply representative today.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. It's Farmer Friday on our show today. We're taking your calls and agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Or you can email us, radio@agphd.com. Just before the break, we're talking with Gary here in Iowa, and he had a great point. They're seeing more corn rootworm pressure, even on the traded products out there, and even where guys were using low rates of insecticide. And he had just asked the question, are we seeing that in other areas too? Gary, thanks for bringing that up, because, yeah, that is a good topic. We hit on this maybe a couple weeks ago that Brian and I were talking about rootworm pressure, and we saw a lot of corn rootworm beetles out there, which tells us there were a lot of corn rootworms feeding earlier in the season. And the other thing that was a big deal, and it might be a big deal now since we had kind of a dry corn harvest where we saw some shelling at the head in a lot of fields that we visited, we're expecting there's going to be some pretty good volunteer corn pressure this year, and it only takes about a month of volunteer corn growing in the field, and rootworms have had enough time to feed on those roots and get to that next stage of their life cycle and emerge as beetles later in the year. So volunteer corn control is going to be really important this year too.
Will planting a cover crop in there, cereal rye in particular, help break that cycle at all?
I don't think so. I don't think it's going to change anything. And, you know, honestly, having a cover crop out there generally leads to more insects just because they've got a nice home. The soil stayed undisturbed. They've got, you know, all that plant material on top of the ground to protect them. So I'm not saying that it's going to make more corn rootworms out there, but I would think just theoretically that their survival would be at least as good in a cover crop, if not even just a little bit better. But I don't have any issue against cover crop. That isn't why I would say plant a cover crop or don't. But with corn rootworm pressure, it's a real thing, and it's something that growers are definitely going to have to manage.
Well, I'll say one thing, with the nice fall we've had, probably a record number of cover crop acres seeded in this corner of the state, and it needs it because we're north of Dubuque and we're pretty hilly, so that's a good thing.
You bet.
I did have one last question before I exit, if I've got time to ask it.
Absolutely.
I know you guys do a lot of plot work, checking different things. Have you done much as far as singulation on soybeans and population rates on soybeans?
Yeah, we have. And it's something that we're going to do more work on next year, probably on a bigger scale on our farm. And it's interesting that you bring this question up right now because Brian stepped out of the studio here for a minute. So it's just me. And Brandon and I actually have slightly differing opinions on this. So here's the thing with soybean population. If you get hail, if you have crusting, if you have anything that hurts your stand throughout the year, you can't really make that up. Now, beans can fill in. So if you have a little bit of hail or something and you still have 80,000 plants left, according to Iowa State and data that they had over the years, if you had at least 80,000 final stand and it was spread out fairly evenly, you're really not losing a whole bunch of yield. And so, of course, there have been a lot of farmers trying, well, what if I only plant 90 or what if I only plant 100? I'm doing a seed treatment on there now, so I'm getting almost all those seeds out of the ground. Could I cut back on rates? So this year we had kind of used a standard of 140,000 plants per acre in 30-inch rows. We tried some 165, and then we tried some 115,000 just to see. And now, granted, we had a dry year, and we didn't get rain in August, kind of like what you were saying, too. And every place that we had lower population, we had, I shouldn't say every place, almost every place that we had lower population, we had more yield. Now, that was pretty cool. But then you had mentioned singulation of that seed, and that's something that we've been working on the last couple of years as well. And just looking plant to plant, when you see seed that's spaced out, it was better. We just had better plants, more pods, things looked better. So yeah, I think we talk about it a lot in corn, that getting that spacing just right and getting planting depth even and all those types of things on corn are big, big important factors. I think it's really big in soybeans too. And I know if my dad was still here, he'd say, oh no, that's soybeans. You can just put a whole bunch out there and they'll make up for it. I don't think so. That's not what we've seen. Lower populations have worked. I mean, you look at some of the best growers out there for soybeans that are setting tremendous records. They're generally not planting super high populations. They're trying to get everything they can get out of each plant.
Yeah, that's kind of what I've seen. We've been planting our soybeans with an air drill, a 500T air drill. We love it. It's super to operate. You can cover a lot of ground. It does a pretty accurate job, but it doesn't do a perfect singulation. Just by the time it meters out, moves through the tubes and gets to the ground, and then you get a little bounce or whatever, but you get these spaces, you know, 6-8 inches, and then you'll have maybe 4 or 5 that are bunched together. So I'm just wondering if we can't pick up a little more yield if we actually go to a planter unit and do a better job of singulation.
Yep, totally know where you're coming from. We used to do a lot of drilling here, too. It's been quite a few years, though, now. I know my dad at one point had really decided he just wanted to own one machine and plant corn and soybeans with that same machine. And then when we got into dry years, he said he liked the consistency of planting depth with the planter better than what he was able to do with the drill, too.
Agree.
Nope, very good points, Gary. I think you're on the right track.
Well, I appreciate the chance to visit. I don't catch your radio show that often, but I do catch almost all your TV. Not necessarily on the TV, or either I watch them on the internet. But,
sure. Well, thanks, Gary.
Appreciate the message you guys put out there, and it's always enjoyable to watch you.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Thanks. So, yeah, when you start doing that singulating seed and planting with a planter, call back in. Let us know how it's going.
Yeah, we're just debating whether to go all the way down to 15s or stick with our corn planter, which is 20s. And I think we're probably going to go with 20s before we invest in another unit.
I think so too. I think you're making the right call.
The only downside is if spraying on 20-inch rows, if you knock out a row with a sprayer tire, now you've got a spot for sunlight to hit the ground, and you could potentially have some late season weeds come. So.
Yeah, there's always the trade-offs. I don't know. I do like that you've got 20-inch row on corn, though, and that consistency, I think, that's going to outweigh some of these trade-offs, though. At least it would in my mind.
Yep. Appreciate your time.
You bet. Thanks a lot, Gary. I've got Greg with us now out in Montana. Greg, how are you?
Good, Darren. I'm fine.
Do you have a great fall out there, too?
Well, we had, as far as the growing season early, so we had 4.5 to 4.75 inches of the rain this year. But we had lots of sub-moisture from last year, and had some prevent that we didn't get cut last year or couldn't get into it this spring. But overall, we were really pleased with the crop, how it turned out. Early stuff got hurt. We had 7/10 there in June, and really turned the mid crop and late crop around, and so all in all, can't complain on that one bit. I do have a question for you, Darren. I've been to a couple of your two of your tiling workshops, and got your tapes and read your books, and I'm gonna have to get a book, Tiling for Dummies 101. I think on that. But anyway, the state of Montana, I battled for 4 years to try and get, they finally approved it. But as far as any NRCS experience, they say they have none, which is fine. But anyway, my question is on the tiling. Is there a difference between virgin tile and recycled on that?
You know, we really haven't. We've used both, and what Gary's or what Greg is talking about here is the plastic that they're using. And yeah, we didn't really find any difference on our farm. We put in a lot of tile, and quite a bit of it's been with recycled materials too. And okay. Yeah, they're really fussy on what type of plastic they're taking for the recycled material, and we found it to be just as durable. We haven't really seen a big challenge here, but. Tell you what, I might let Brian comment on that just a little bit more, but we're up against a break here, Greg. If you can hang on, we'll bring you back on right after the break here and let Brian throw his 2 cents on that too.
Okay,
sounds good. It's Farmer Friday and Ag PhD Radio. We'll be right back after this.
I need the solve without the sell.
With NK Seeds, I get people I trust who show me where their hybrids and varieties fit in my field without the heavy sell.
So I get solutions that solve my problems from a partner who knows that success matters.
Find your solve at nkseeds.com.
We now bring you an important news bulletin.
This just in from Live Action News.
Innovation has come to the world of burndown.
New Elevor herbicide controls your toughest weeds, even glyphosate and ALS-resistant weeds like mare's tail and henbit. Talk with your retailer about Elevor herbicide today and ask how you can start elevating your burndown.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Give your corn a strong defense against stress throughout the season with MycoApply Endoprime SC. MycoApply Endoprime SC uses 4 specially selected species of mycorrhizal fungi to protect your crop against stress. That means more access to water and key micronutrients while building a healthy soil structure for stronger crops for years to come. Stronger corn starts beneath the surface. Learn more about MycoApply Endoprime SC at endoprimecorn.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. It's Farmer Friday, and our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. If you'd like to talk about what's going on in your farm or if you have an agronomic question, got an interesting one here. We've got Greg with us out in Montana who's doing some tiling, and I know there is a little bit of drainage tile work getting done in Montana now, as Greg had mentioned.
The state of
Montana is finally starting to get on board with this, but not without a little pushing, the way it sounds. But, Greg, I got Brian back, and he's all fired up to talk to you about tile.
Well, Darren just said you had one question about virgin versus not virgin tile. So what's the cost difference between the two for you?
Well, that I I finally called. I get the green sheet there.
Sure.
And I finally called. I went online, but anyway, I called one of the contractors, and he gave me some names to call for pricing. So I haven't.
Okay.
I asked him that question also, and
he
basically said the same thing.
Yeah.
I haven't seen any.
Well, I would say it's worth just a little bit more. I mean, I've been involved in some tile manufacturing in the past, and it's worth just a little bit more. So I would say for my own farm, if I had to pay 5% more for virgin tile, I would do it. If it's more than 5%, I don't think I'd do it. So that's okay. Just my personal opinion and what I've seen over the years.
Okay.
Just
thank you.
Yep. That's just good to know. Yeah. Just a little bit less risk with the virgin, but usually, I mean, I'll just say for all the pipe manufacturers, they'll work to certain standards, and they're really working hard to try to keep their costs down, yet still have good standards. Okay. So there's always that kind of fine line that they're playing with. Well, if you could get virgin for just a little bit more money, to me, it's worth it because I just have less risk. And granted, I'm 52 years old, and so in my lifetime, the tile's probably going to last one way or the other. But for my kids or grandkids or whoever owns the ground eventually, they might be happy when it lasts 5-10 years longer, or there are a couple less spots that have to be repaired or something like that. So that's kind of that's the way I'd look at it. So not a huge deal, though.
Hey, one other thing, Greg, you made that comment that you've been to our workshops and that type of thing, but you're looking for a book, Drainage Tile for Dummies. Now, Brian, I don't know about you, but we fall into that category, Greg. So we've done it. I think anybody can. And you know, water runs downhill. So as much as we can get that to happen, we can be successful.
Yeah,
but the whole thing is. Go ahead.
Well, with the excessive water that we had last year, rain, and there's spots where I still haven't been able to get into here at freeze up that we've cropped many years prior to that.
Sure.
But my question is on the elevation, where my three wet spots are to get to another wet spot is about 200 yards. So yet the elevation is different. I can't, other than a lift station, which I can't see that, but just trying to figure out how that all works.
So I don't know if I entirely follow you. These wet areas you're talking about, can you get to a lower area where things would drain away? It's just you're saying that they would have to, they would not be able to connect. You'd have to run them separately, or what are you saying?
Well,
exactly?
No, where the really wet spots where I was not able to get into this fall.
Yep.
Is a lower elevation.
Okay.
Than where I want to
drain to
end up, right? And I mean, I'd be draining where it's fairly level, got an incline. Going towards the outlet.
Okay. I got you. So, yeah, we've run into that before too. And then basically you've got one of two choices. Either you put a lift station in and pump it up, and then you have constant cost, although it really has not been too bad for us. But the other way is you look at, okay, how far do I have to go to actually get downhill? And in some cases, it might be a mile or 2 miles, whatever. Well, if you have your own tile plow, and tile is really not that expensive, I've kind of looked at it before, like, all right, well, I don't mind that so much. And we've done that in a few cases, worked with some neighbors and things like that. So, I mean, those are the two things you have to weigh out. So if there isn't a lower area within a few miles, then you're kind of stuck, and that's where you got to put the lift station in. But our dad was originally from north central Iowa, and so he talked to us all the time about tile down there, and he just said, you know, it was roughly 100 years ago. I don't know the exact dates or anything, but roughly 100 years ago, the farmers in that area all got together, basically formed their own drainage districts, and they put in these enormously huge tile lines running all the way to the river. So where in Iowa, in north central Iowa, it's really flat and you're not going to find much slope and it's hard to get anywhere. It was, I mean, even for my dad and his dad, they were super thankful that this got done years and years ago, so then people could take advantage of that. Whereas for you, there isn't anything like that. There are no county main tile lines. Or like in the state of Minnesota, they dug all these drainage ditches. There's like 27,000 miles of drainage ditches or something in the state of Minnesota. So you don't have either. So you're kind of on your own, and that's where it's, it could get a little challenging, I understand.
Would one use a backhoe to try and get that, even though so the tile would be deeper? Well, that wouldn't work either.
Well,
it'd be deeper the whole way.
Yeah, yes. So if it gets too deep for your tile plow to run through, then yes, that's where you could backhoe stuff in. You actually could just bulldoze and push some dirt away, so then you could drive your tractor and your tile plow through. I mean, there are lots of different options. I would say we've done some boring too. We have bored underneath roads, we bored through hills, things like that. So, I mean, there are plenty of options out there. It's just, unfortunately, none of those options is as cheap or easy as when you just have a little bit of natural slope and you can put a tile line in.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Thank you guys very much, Brian. You guys have a Merry Christmas.
You bet.
Stay
you too.
Healthy. Appreciate your show.
You bet. Thanks for the call, Greg.
Bye-bye.
Okay, got some more questions that have come in. This one comes from Anderson. He said, you guys talked about iron deficiency. What's that? In South Alabama, literally, we've got red clay with iron deposits in it. So we definitely don't run into that problem down here. Hey, you know what, though, Anderson? It's kind of interesting. The soils are different all over, and some areas have different strengths and weaknesses. And, yeah, iron may be one of your strengths. So you got plenty, and I'm sure there's something different that you're probably short in that maybe other areas are high in. So, yeah, you just have to look at a complete analysis and find what the challenges are.
Yep, absolutely. Hey, Darren, there was a question over there on calcium. I was queued up to take that. Oh, and now you're handing it to me. Okay, so this one comes from Dan. He says he's in central Washington State, and he says certain varieties of apples, like Honeycrisp, are very prone to calcium deficiencies called bitter pit. What soil pH range is the best for calcium uptake? Most of the soils I work with vary from 6.7 to 8.2. Well, Dan, you're in luck, because 6.7 to 8.2, usually calcium is fairly available. So the charts that I've got will show from about a 6 to an 8, that's where calcium is really available. Now, as we say that, we often have a guest on here, well, a couple of guests that talk quite often about this. Neil Kinsey does, and then Dick Goff. And so Dick Goff used to work with Midwest Labs. Neil Kinsey's one of the leading soil fertility experts in the world. And both of these guys will talk about, you know, sometimes even when you have thousands of parts per million or thousands of pounds of calcium in the soil, it's just not very available. And I've always struggled with that a little bit. It's like, well, how can it not be available? I literally have thousands of pounds sitting here. What's the problem? So a lot of times what we do to make that more available is, number one, we'll use biological products. Or I know there's a product Darren and I were just working on here over the last couple of weeks called Extricate. And I don't even remember what exactly is in there, Darren. Maybe you can help me out with that. But we took some of our soil.
That's organic acids.
Okay. We took some of our soil, put with the Extricate in different situations, and released a lot more calcium. So that was great. Also, we talked to people about sulfur. Sulfur together with the calcium sometimes can free it up. But I would say we want to look at soil tests in general and see if there are other things that happen to be out of balance a little bit. So I know when we start talking about trees, potassium is a really big deal, but there are certainly some micronutrients that impact things as well. Beyond that, like I say, it very well could be a sulfur issue. Otherwise, just try things like organic acids, some biologicals, just anything you can, just to start experimenting to try to make that calcium that's already in the soil a little more available. And certainly, you can add more calcium too. Lots of good sources out there like gypsum and lime.
Thanks for that question, and thanks to you for listening today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. Now stay tuned for Rob Sharkey and Shark Farmer Radio. We'll